Brad has been staying in my house now for the last 3 or 4 days, and as it happens, Brad came the exact same day we got a new dog.
That's right.
And it was wonderful because Jake Parker was also staying here at the house. Jake's reaction, oh my goodness, look at this little sweet love, look at this little sweet love. And Brad's reaction can only be described as, hello, creature. I acknowledge your existence. We share this space.
I see that you're having metabolic processes.
You seem to be carbon-based, yes. Everything seems to be in order. I shall be sitting over here. No, no. You stay over there, creature. That's fine. I don't need you anywhere near me. So, lifelong love of dogs,
yes,
Brad Geiger.
Yeah, you can tell. It's in my soul, really. It's hard to keep bottled up.
Can only be described as a great lover of animals. It comes out in oodles.
And meanwhile, from my perspective, every third minute around here, people's voices go up 3 octaves and they start dancing around. Look at this little squeechy-weechy face. Look at this. And all of a sudden, everybody's voices goes way up. And
oh, my God.
Just like that.
I mean, the dog
is with these people?
His entire life is encapsulated in 3 or 4 pounds. That's all he weighs. He's like a whisper of a dream of a dog. He weighs nothing. And so how can you not have your voice go to become the little squeechy-weechy? Brad Geiger, great lover of dogs, also a great lover of comics. So on that note, I will say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, your show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Keller, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of the comic strip documentary.
Do we need to start from the beginning?
Apparently this water is a little too strong. Have you slipped something in here?
The question is, when have I not slipped
That's
something
good water.
In there?
Anyway, this show is about making comics and making a living from comics, and we thank you because it's made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. And Brad Geiger, Brad! Let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. So the reason that I've made the arduous flight out to Los Angeles primarily was to hang out with my friend Dave Kellett. But also, it was NCS Fest this weekend. And that was a big reason that we're all together. This was NCS's attempt at creating a comics festival, an outdoor comics festival, similar to Angoulême. And it was in beautiful Huntington Beach, California, and I've got to say it was an enjoyable weekend.
Well, now, what is your big picture impression of what Huntington Beach is as a town?
As a town, like, very much a beach community, very much like similar to what I'd see up and down the Jersey coast, back on the East Coast, like a boardwalk community type of deal.
Sure.
Very much beach-oriented. Everything points right to that beach.
And the sarcasm in me immediately goes, yeah, same palm trees that you'd see in Jersey on the coast. Yeah, but it's one of those things where it's a community where everyone, every third person walking around, even a couple blocks from the beach, is walking around either in a bikini or a banana hammock. And and so as a show, Brad made the funny comment that I said, this is the only comics convention where you would see someone walking up to your booth in a bikini. And Brad said,
I said, it's the only comic convention you'd want them to.
There's only so many guys in Slave Leia costumes that you can take before you go, I've seen enough moobs today. That's enough. That's enough for me. I've reached my quota for today.
I've reached the moob quotient.
The moob quota. Thank you, officer. I've reached my moob quotient. But anyway, the city was nice.
City was beautiful.
The weather, for the most part, was cooperative. We had a little rain the morning of the second day.
Yeah.
But it was really fun because we shared one master booth, one 40-foot long booth, with David Malky of Wondermark, Jake Parker of jakeparker.com, Brad Geiger of Evil Inc., and Dave Kellett of Sheldon and Drive. There.
Yeah. And we each had individual tents, which was kind of nice. And then we just peeled back the walls between us and turned it into one big party back there.
Yeah, and it was, we didn't ask permission. We just basically deconstructed the fair tents.
But it was I kind of enjoyed exhibiting in a tent.
It was lovely.
Yeah.
The sun was blocked. The only downside in peeling back the walls was that Jake Parker had access to my M&Ms all weekend. And
he certainly did.
They rapidly diminished. Rapidly diminished.
Every time it got to be Pavlovian. Every time I heard that little rattle.
Sure, sure,
I
knew. Sure. You knew Jake Parker.
Jake was
you,
in the
you'd
area.
Look around to see a Gollum creature of Jake Parker. Gollum, Gollum, M&M's. No, it was great. We make that joke because Jake is the only one of the four of us that went out jogging 5 miles every day while he was here. So the rest of us are sipping scotch and Jake's out jogging. So
Jake is the only one among us who can see his belt buckle.
So totally acceptable that Jake ate all of my M&M's. Yeah. That is fine. Yeah. But yeah, the show itself, I would cast as underwhelming for the most part in sales, right? I mean, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Listen,
you don't go to a show like this for sales, I feel like. You go because it's palm trees and outdoors. And
it was Reuben weekend and all like that. So you've got to put a little caveat in there in that this was their first convention.
Sure.
And nobody goes gangbusters their first convention.
Yeah, you had a great point. You said no first year convention is great.
Right.
But this was good.
This was good, and they tried really hard. Like, there was some...
that sounds so condescending. They did their best.
They were in...
They tried, yeah.
That's what I said. I went up to the promoter, and I said, you know, you really made a go of it.
Oh! You know, your writing's not that great. The art's so-so, but you're making a go of it. Yeah, so...
So we, it was definitely a good show in that they were trying really hard. It was not going to be a gangbusters show.
Right.
I think there's certain they had a great idea doing an outdoor show.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, I don't think they drew attendees. I don't think a lot of people showed up for the show. I think a lot of people discovered the show walking on their way to the beach
because it's. For those that don't know, and around the world, Huntington Beach is sort of famous for having one of the last major coastal piers in the U.S., the other ones being Santa Monica. There's another one, I think, in Oceanside, California. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It has one of the last major piers. And so people go to walk the pier and see the beachfront. And to Brad's point, a lot of people would come, discover the show, remember they like comics, and maybe there were people that would pick up one or two books. It was actually pretty pleasant. But I think I, as a local... would probably do the show again because the cost for me was $3 in gas and maybe breakfast down at Huntington Beach.
Yeah.
I don't know that Brad would do the show again or that it's a traveling show, right? No. Is that a fair comment? Or at least for the foreseeable future, it's not a traveling show.
Exactly. No, I don't see myself coming back for it. The sales were definitely, for me, were not there.
Right.
And again, it was I mainly because most of the people were just happened to be their people. I NCS didn't draw fans.
Right.
There was a few people and a few Patreon backers, as a matter of fact, that we want to say thank you to personally, including Shell, who came all the way out
from Portland.
Yeah. To see us. So that was
Shell delightful. Was a delight. Yeah.
And there was a few people who were like that. But it wasn't like a comic convention. It was the first thing Malky had such a great comment because I said, you know what I noticed? Unlike any other comic convention that I've been to in the last 20 years, no cosplay.
And Dave said,
yeah, that's because in order to cosplay, you would have had to have planned to be here. And most of the people that we've seen today didn't plan to be here for a show.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Yeah. It was very much I think if you were a local and you had heard about it, you bring the kids.
Right.
You know, but there were also just a lot of people walking their dogs on beach cruisers or walking next to their beach cruisers.
Bicycles.
And Huntington Beach and Long Beach in general, Orange County in general, is famous for its custom beach cruisers. So you'd have people going by with like custom built speakers into their bike, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
And anyway, regardless, the highlight for us was probably the friendship of the four of us exhibiting in the booths. And I think, you know, the other thing logistically that was a problem for the show, for an average show, you would normally exhibit and then the panels or the talks were within a short little jaunt, shall we say, a walking distance stone throw, right?
Within, you'd leave yourself 10 minutes to get to the panel, tops. And that's so you can sit down, shake hands with the sound tech. Do a little warm up,
A little stretches. Some calisthenics.
I usually do some push-ups behind the table.
Sure.
10 minutes, you can get all of that done.
Right.
Now at this show.
So this show, on the map it says 4 blocks.
4 blocks.
Now this was not city blocks. This was coastal blocks. And for those that know sort of coastal regulations, you have beach zoning, which means houses are built 5 feet from each other. You have city blocks, which are standard New York, Philly kind of blocks. And then you have coastal blocks, which is like each block is like a quarter of a mile kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So the walk from the exhibition space down to the beach on or down to the hotel on the map, four blocks. You leave 10 minutes, you're there. Those were some long blocks. And granted, it was a lovely walk. You were right along the beach, but it took us 10, 15, if you were struggling, 20 minutes to get down
Listen, we left around, for our show that was at noon, we left around 11:30.
Right.
Maybe 11:35. We scooted right in there at noon.
Yeah.
To the and thank goodness we were able to make it past all the people that had lined up to be there and all the people that were crowding that that auditorium. And we were able to force our way towards the front of the room to do our panel. But it took us, it was a good, I got to go back and Google map it. But if you told me that it was a mile to between the festival and the hotel, I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Right. So if you had any older congoers or people that physically had unique challenges in getting from point A to point B, it was a big ask to that distance. So, and they had a shuttle running, but the logistics of that were a little inopportune.
You remember what happened when we asked at the information booth where the shuttle picked up?
Yeah, they said it was faster to walk, right?
Yeah, she said, well, after first she said, well, I don't know. I'm like, really? Where does it pick up? She says, I don't know, over there somewhere. And she says, but you're probably better off to walk. And I'm like, yeah, well, okay.
Yeah.
And coming back, we took the shuttle, but I'm not even sure if we that there was a second stop between, there was three stops. If we would have taken the shuttle, we might have been late because it would have been taken the long way around.
True.
Then you've got to stop and let people load up.
Yeah.
The shuttle wasn't a great solution but in general, that was one of their biggest problems was the panels because they had a three-tier system that confused everybody.
Oh, and my professionals included.
Oh, yeah.
So the bulk of the show, I think, is probably safe to describe as free.
Yeah.
The marketplace was free. The bulk of the talks were free. But then they had a layer that could be described as paid, right? Like paid tickets to get there.
Right.
Then on top of that, they had another layer that, to sort of add to the confusion that was premium. I, after 3 days of looking at it, still don't know what the difference was between the paid and the premium. And did the premium get you into the paid? Did the paid get you into the premium? I honestly don't know. I really don't know. And I'm not trying to be a jerk. I don't know what that system was. So.
I finally figured it out. It was free, which meant free.
Right.
Premium meant you needed to have an NCS badge.
Okay.
Like those little wristbands.
Oh, that's what that was.
So you had to be at the convention to get the premium.
Okay.
Ticketed means that even if you had a wristband, you needed a ticket. So what happened was a lot of people came up to us at the booth after our show and said, oh, sorry, we missed your show, but we didn't want to buy a ticket or we didn't have a ticket. And we sat there and went, you don't need a ticket. You could have been there, you know?
Right.
It was so confusing. And also the
I'm still not sure I say this as a friend, I'm not sure that you're entirely right either. Because it could have been premium got you into everything with the badge, but if you were a civilian, say a non-NCS member, maybe that was the ticketed. See, I honestly don't know. I really don't know what. And part of it was as a first year convention, like San Diego Comic Con, Emerald City Comic Con, they long ago adopted this grid system for saying on Wednesday here are all the events, on Thursday here are all the events, and similarly, it was really confusing both on the website and in the booklet. Like, where did you go? What was the thing? What was going on at noon? What room was it in? What were the other options also available at noon so that you could choose between them? So it was unfortunate because we, as grown adults, were looking at this booklet going, I'm not seeing everything that's in here. I don't know what else is going on right now.
That was my main complaint is that, and you made the comment, if you wanted to throw a convention and you were setting up your website and you're setting up your program, what's the first thing you're going to do?
You're going to look at San Diego Comic-Con and see what, or New York Comic-Con, see what
and
they do.
And if you can't find them, you find anything that Reed Exhibitions has done.
Right.
And if you can't find Reed,
you find Wizard. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
These people have all figured this out a long time ago.
Yeah.
Now you take a look. Sunday, we're riding to the show and you go, hey, Brad, look up the panels and see what panels are there. Maybe we want to see some panels. Being a seasoned con goer, I could not find the answer to that question.
Yeah.
And when I finally did on the website, I found 1/3 of the total panels.
Right.
Because then Malky comes in with his program and you ask him the same question and he comes up with three times as much stuff that I was able to find looking hard on the website.
Right.
He finds it in the program. That's really, really bad information dissemination. Yeah. That's something that's got to be solved for the next time they do this. Because people won't show up to their panel if they don't know what the panel is.
Right. And so thinking of this charitably, there's institutional knowledge that happens after a show's been going for 4, 5, 6 years. And a lot of this is just, we haven't done it yet.
Right.
But we'll have some feedback, and I'm sure they're going to be soliciting feedback. And anyway, long story short, we had a lovely weekend.
Yes.
Not a huge moneymaker for us, but a lovely weekend nonetheless. And the people were wonderful. I got to say, the Huntington Beach people were fantastic. Those that came up were very supportive in what they bought. And it was really lovely to meet some readers that we've never met before. And frankly, it was lovely meeting all the Comic Lab listeners. There's a lot.
Yeah.
Which was
that
great.
That was cool.
And so that was good. But the most fun has been to see Brad here at the house and to see my whiskey very quickly disappearing. Just all of my stocks, years worth of stocks, just dwindling very quickly.
I've explained that. That stuff evaporates. It's alcohol based. It will evaporate. Are you sure you had the caps on?
I just noticed that it evaporates very quickly when you come. Must be a heat wave.
Must be a whiskey heat wave.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, was there anything else we want to talk about before we jump into $5 questions? Oh, there is. We want to talk about the end of my Kickstarter.
I want to talk about this thing right here.
Yeah.
Kickstarter for Pop Culture, Dave's new book.
So for those of you that are watching this in video format on patreon.com/comiclab as members, you'll see that I have an advanced copy, a perfectly finished print copy of Pop Culture, which is the book that I just Kickstarted. We got the advanced copy mailed into us today for approval, and it bound together beautifully, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be one of the prettiest books that I have Kickstarted to date. It came out really lovely. The print quality is great. The paper quality is great. The binding. I have, for the first time ever, spot UV and metal on the cover. And the metal foil is an interesting interplay with the spot UV. Look at you on the video. For those of you that are watching on video, Brad is manhandling this book in a beautiful way. It's very Vanna White-esque. It's great. Yeah. It's delightful. Anyway, the book came out great, but I thought this would be worthwhile to talk about because the book kickstarted at three times what I wanted to get the value of.
Right, right.
And yet, I am coming off of my most recent Kickstarter that did five times the value of this Kickstarter, right? And so even as a seasoned pro where this book is getting made, it's profitable, and over the course of the remainder of this book's stock's life, it will make double what I've already made, right? So by any stretch, it's going to do fine. And
absolutely.
Yet it feels like, and this is worth talking about, it feels like a failure to me on some respects because
really?
The last Kickstarter did five times what this one did.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
It's hard not to. I'm just saying, as a human response, it's hard not to feel that way.
Listen, if you would have gone back in time and told a young Davy Kellett, who is just starting this stuff out in '98 or so, right?
Sure.
If you're and putting websites together on Microsoft Word like
right.
you're talking about today, if you were to go back and tell young Davy Kellett, hey, guess what? You're going to do a Kickstarter. You're going to start out with a book in profit. You're going to be in the black on this book. It's as if you've been paid the advance already and you're right into royalties.
Right.
And it's going to be $25,000. That's going to be the number that you start at.
Right.
You tell a young Dave Kellett that, is he going to feel like a failure?
First, he's going to ask you what Kickstarter is because it's 1998. And he's going to be like, who is this old man telling me about Kickstarter? That's what young Davey's going to say.
Yeah.
No, but you're right. I mean, the greater context of this is that, of course, it did fine. People were super supportive of it. I'm so thankful for the readership that made it happen.
Yeah.
The book's going to do great. It's going to end up having made 40 to 50 by the time the end of that book, like the last ones that I sell. And yet, I'm just telling you, the human response, the last one I Kickstarted made 116,000, 118, whatever it was. It's hard not to have that big step down and not go, well, I guess I'm losing it. I guess this is the beginning of the end. You know,
does that make you reevaluate how you gauge failure and success?
Well, what it definitely does make me gauge is between my children. Drive did 100 and whatever, 16, 18,000.
Yeah.
Sheldon did 25,000. It's hard not to go, which child do I love more today? You know, it's hard not to.
There's a pragmatic angle to all that that you have to have.
Mm-hmm.
There is, in other words, moving forward when it comes down to which one are you going to spend more time on
right.
in the days and the months and the years to come,
right.
I'd
be a fool not to go, not to tip the scales a little bit. A little bit. And that's okay, I think.
The thing that's hard for me to believe. I like Drive. I like Drive a lot. I'm a Drive reader. But this is so tailor made, especially for social media. It's your work is delightful. I got to tell you.
Well, you know what's interesting about this book?
Check it out, says the little boy.
Oh no!
I'm watching sci-fi over Wi-Fi.
Oh no!
And I have my Wi-Fi sci-fi blaring in hi-fi. Silent penultimate panel. The duck says, time for me to go bye-bye. From my Wi-Fi, hi-fi, sci-fi?
I'm attacked. I feel attacked right now. Don't read a second one. Do not
How
read
is
a second
you can feel in
Stop
total...
it. Stop it.
Oh, it's hot.
There is nothing worse than having someone read your... I'm actively flop sweating. There
it's
is nothing
bad
worse
when
than
I'm reading somebody else's comic, but I agree to sit here and read to hear your words read back to you, and then like I purposefully didn't laugh at the end because I'm like I'm gonna just turn the knife, I'm gonna get to the punchline and
it's
just
the worst.
Stare.
It is the worst to have your comics read back to you, especially in a monotone with no feeling. Like, hey, we're having a lot of fun today. Oh boy, we sure are. Oh no. Anyway.
You're glistening.
I'm glistening. I'm gonna mat my head. So anyway, the short end of this is that it is, on some level, it's a shame because it is one of the prettiest physical books that I've ever made.
Yeah.
And so on that end, I'm like, how did this not do as great as ones that I did 4 or 5 years ago? Part of it is it's a pop culture book.
Yeah.
And I will be honest, and this is worth sharing, I got a little bit scared right before I launched the Kickstarter because Will Terry's Kickstarter got taken down by Marvel Comics
right.
because he had some images of Marvel. And so a lot of the images in this book are spoofs. It's like the character Sheldon and the character Arthur the Duck and somebody are making fun of Galactus, say.
Right.
And then the fourth panel is sort of that kind of cutaway reaction shot from Galactus going, hey, you know, my feelings are hurt or whatever it is.
Forest Moon.
Right, exactly. And so it's very SNL Mad Magazine type parodies where, you know, and literally the word parody is a legally protected class of right. visual comics, right? And yet when Will's got taken by Marvel Comics, I was like, I'm going to pull back on my public ammo of what I share from this book. Maybe a mistake. I admit that. But I'm saying like a part of me is wondering, maybe I wasn't able to accurately portray what was in this book because I pulled back and I acted out of fear of the legal team from Marvel Comics.
Right.
You know?
And we talked about, because I really do think you did this Kickstarter with one hand tied behind your back.
I did, kind of intentionally. Yeah. Because I was scared.
So did you talk to a lawyer? Because I know what I think. I looked at Will's stuff and it's like, okay, I see the point that Marvel's lawyers are making.
Right.
Because there's no...
Because his was no commentary.
Right. It was just, hey, here's these Marvel comics as babies.
Right.
And that's and then they went off and did their whatever
Especially
their stuff.
Because Marvel has that coming out
right.
in the near future. Yeah.
But yours is, what if Galactus was on a diet?
Right.
That's a comment.
Right.
That's commentary. You fall so squarely into fair use, it seems like it's a no-brainer. Did you talk to any lawyers about this?
So to answer your question, I talked to two lawyers about this, and I talked to multiple cartoonists about this.
You talked to me about this.
I did talk to you. Oh, yeah, that's one of the, I don't consider that one of the cartoonists that I talked to, but I talked to many pros. Yeah, you talked to me. No, I did talk to you as well.
And
yeah,
many pros.
And many pros. And they all agreed that, no, this is clearly falls under parody and you'll be fine under parody, you know.
Yeah.
The problem, though, is that when you're facing the legal guns of Disney or of Marvel more specifically or of whatever property you want to point your guns at,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
they have lawyers on staff. I would have to hire lawyers. It just gets expensive to defend that parody.
It would have been a white knuckle 30-day period.
Right.
You would have been tortured.
Right. And so I figured better to have less money to withhold some of my better cartoons that made fun of, were literally parodies of these various titles, whether it be Harry Potter, Star Wars, Star Trek, Marvel.
Yeah.
Because I just didn't want to get the Kickstarter shut down or have to defend it in a way that, like, I knew I was in the right, but
right.
I don't want to spend 10 grand for a lawyer to defend this. You know?
And at the end of the day, if their lawyers are bigger than your lawyers, they're going to win. They'll be right.
Absolutely. So anyway, I made a decision, but I agree with you that there was a hand tied behind my back. That's a great way to say that. Good
job.
So
do you think that there's a possibility that this, unlike some of your other books that were that kickstarted big and then went into distribution and did their job in distribution, but obviously not as much as Kickstarter, do you think there's a possibility this one goes opposite, where it kickstarted very healthy, but then once it goes into distribution, it finds its audience?
So that's great that you should mention that, because Beth and I were talking about it the other day. So my Pug Kickstarter book kickstarted for something like 35,000, 37,000. I think it's done 2.5 times that in terms of convention sales and online sales.
Mm-hmm.
And yet my Drive book, which did the exact opposite, kickstarted at 116,000. But has made very little in post sales. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody that wanted it got it at Kickstarter. For the Pug book, a lot of people have gotten it. I mean, you saw over the weekend at NCS,
that
Pug book sells itself. I literally do nothing and it sells itself. So yes, I do think that this book, especially at Comic Cons, will sell really well. And just a note, there's a long tail to this that also includes my next Kickstarter. Because I can have a tier in my next Kickstarter that says, get Dave's two most recent books, one of which is this one,
right?
And so that's a custom-made thing for the next Kickstarter. You pay a little less than double, and you get two of the books, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the untapped audience will eventually get tapped. That's why I said this book will make double what it's, if not more, of its Kickstarter in the years ahead.
Yeah.
It's just a little disappointing in the time being. And it's a very human response, I think.
No, you know? And it's a natural response. And listen, it's why I'm glad you're talking about it today is because people need to hear, you know, so there's a certain number of people looking at this that look at you and they say, Dave Kellett, established cartoonist.
Sure.
He's somebody that's got it figured out. Right?
Sure.
And they need to hear that sometimes you experience this and have to grapple with those same feelings of imposter syndrome,
inadequacy,
failure, inadequacy. I'm not attractive enough.
I'm losing my touch. I'm not attractive enough. Why did you throw that in there? Why did you have to include that? Maybe I need to lose some weight. What's with this waddle under my chin? Why is everyone laughing at me as I go by?
Was this haircut a good idea?
Yeah. Oh, what a little jerk. Anyway, no, you're right. Is that we all have these when projects launch, when projects are going, when projects end, when you review projects.
Yeah.
There's insecurity all along the way for each one of us, you know, and no matter. I told you this before. I went to that San Diego Comic-Con after that Gangbusters Drive Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Thinking, look out, world. Here I come.
Right, right.
Pave a gold path for Dave Kellett, because this book is going to make me $20,000 at San Diego Comic-Con. And I sold 4 copies.
Yeah,
right?
Nobody bothered. A cartoonist is coming through.
And let me tell you, there's no worse feeling than I parked my van under San Diego Comic-Con for loadout. And I'm packing a lot of Drive boxes to Los Angeles for the drive back, because I thought it was the hubris thing. I thought those books were going to sell like hotcakes, Brad, because the Kickstarter had sold like hotcakes.
Of course.
And so it is a good lesson learned that no matter the successes or failures, you have to try to maintain an emotional even keel.
Yeah.
Because there are always going to be ups and downs, no matter what level you're at.
And does it help to take the long view at that point? Is to say, okay, listen, I still got my eye on the horizon. I know this is happening here, and we've got a little bit of an upturn or a little bit of a downturn, but keep your eye on the horizon, on that goal 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road.
Yes.
That's where the important part is.
Well, and the way, even not so much that far, my eye immediately turns to the next project.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Get this one done, get it into people's hands, have it on a table for Comic-Con, have it on the site, and immediately turn to the next project.
Yep.
Which for me will be the Anatomy of Authors book and the children's book that I'm doing.
Right.
And an undisclosed video project that I will also be doing.
Oh.
that I can't talk about yet, but I started that work on that this weekend. So we'll see.
Just this weekend.
Just this weekend, as it happens when Brad was here. Interesting.
Wonder why what that was. Just this weekend.
Anyway, all right. So moving on, why don't we jump into some $5 questions? Because it's been too much about what Dave Kellett feels.
A lot of
Dave Kellett's fifis.
It's never enough about what Dave Kellett feels. That's what I say. So here's a $5 question that one of our Patreon backers sent in.
Patreon.com/comiclab. Sure.
That's the one. So this comes in from Jeremy, who says, for someone's first time Kickstarter, would you recommend going hardcover only to get my sea legs in gauge demand versus doing a soft cover as well? In other words, he's doing a book. Should it be a hardcover instead of a hardcover plus a soft cover? I'm worried that as a first timer, I will have so much on my plate and not knowing exactly how I will do. That might be the takeaway from the stuff I really need to learn for the first time. So doing a book, first time Kickstarter, he says, I'm thinking I should do it hardcover only. What do you think?
Well, my immediate reaction is that I am kind of amazed that Jeremy's reaction is to go hardcover first.
Yeah.
And that the default would not be softcover, which is both a more manageable failure in case it doesn't work, it's more easily managed in terms of files. There's a couple less file wrinkles that you have to deal with when submitting the cover file to the printer. And I think is frankly a better price point for a first time Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's cheaper.
It's cheaper for both you to produce and cheaper for people to buy in on. So I think you're thinking about limiting the complexity is correct.
Yes.
But I think the complexity you have chosen is wrong. And I think you should aim your guns at a soft cover only,
yes,
not a hard cover. What do you think, Brad Geiger?
I agree 100%. Plus, soft cover is easier to get into distribution. Mm-hmm. If you are going to go out to a retail outlet, the price point is a big one for me. Mm-hmm. And then what you do, especially since this is your first time Kickstarter, you hold that hardcover back as a premium item for maybe a stretch goal or something like that, to where you see, okay, I can see this is really going to go over. I'm going to have extra money to play with. You have your quotes in mind, so you know the price point in terms of your Kickstarter where you need to set that stretch goal. Then you hold that back. I've seen people get very excited about that. It's
right.
Like, oh, okay, we're getting a big upgrade. That's great.
Yep.
I wouldn't start there. I would hold that back as a premium item that you can fall back to once you see this thing is really starting to go.
I think that's right. And frankly, I don't even know that you want to hold it as a fallback premium. And I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. If you start a Kickstarter saying it's a soft cover and then say, surprise, we're getting a hard cover, you will find that there is a not small percentage of your backers that say, oh, I didn't want a hardcover. I don't know if you found that.
There's
a lot of people
have.
That don't want hardcovers. They don't collect hardcovers. They don't need a hardcover. They will then ask you to provide what you promised, which was a soft cover.
Yes.
And now you've just created the complexity of having to produce a hardcover and a soft cover when you're only going to make 500, 1,000 books. And isn't that a pain in the butt?
Right.
So I would say keep it at a soft cover. Make your stretch goals to make that soft cover better. More pages, different kind of cover, different
spot
kind of paper
UV
material,
gloss.
Spot UV gloss, this, that, French flaps, whatever you want to add in. I would say avoid the hardcover and go just soft cover. What do you think? Last thoughts on that, Brad?
Nah, I co-sign that.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we'll tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
Oh, when you do, you'll get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, no worries.
You can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Leave us a 5-star and a few kind words.
That, and along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, let's talk comics.
So, here's our next $5 Patreon question. Comes from Steve Barry. And he says, hi, guys. What do you think about choosing between options that lean more towards practical versus options that lean more towards joy?
Okay.
This is a great question. For example, there's a lot of great practical reasons to use Clip Studio, but I have much more fun drawing in Procreate. My creative side says to choose joy. That would be Procreate. My business side says to be more strategic. That's Clip Studio. What do you think? Does Steven go with joy or does he go with practical?
Ooh, this is a great question. So my immediate reaction to this is why not both? And I'll tell you what you mean, what I mean. So,
and I'll tell you what you mean.
And I'll tell you what you mean. I'll tell you what you're going to say, Brad Geiger, and you're going to say it. Here's what I mean. If you're enjoying doing your character work, your background work, your pose work in Procreate, do it there. Export it real quick via Dropbox. Bring it into Clip Studio. You've got your panel work. Bada bing, bada boom. You've brought in your joyfully drawn pictures. You're either retracing or bringing those live right away because you've exported it as a TIFF or whatever. And then bada bada bing, bada boom. You've combined the best of both worlds, the layout possibilities of Clip Studio Pro and the drawing joy of a laptop or an iPad in your lap with Procreate. Brad Geiger, what do you think? Ooh, big sigh. Sigh from Brad Geiger.
It's an interesting question. My only worry, I'm so not familiar with Procreate.
Okay.
So I'm a little bit worried. I even take my Clip Studio stuff and send it to Photoshop for the final color work.
Right.
Because I know I can control all those layers and channels exactly for print. I don't have to worry about having a rich black that's going to print on all the layers, for example.
Right.
Except for when I do that, but then I scale it a certain way. In other words, I know that I can set up this thing for print exactly.
You know your way around Photoshop.
And I think it's possible in Clip Studio, but I don't even know for sure, like to do the stuff that I want to do to that file. And in Procreate, I'm even more doubtful, although you may very well may.
Right.
And so much of the way I set a file up isn't necessary quite so much for today's printing because they are so dead on register. You know, so there's so much of it that I do that maybe isn't as important
as
it was.
Kind of like a belt and suspenders of, you know, for what's needed now.
Because I remember walking Jake through all this and he says, I'm not going to do all that. I've printed a book before. I'm not going to do that. You know, But at the same time, I'm still hesitant myself. If you want my opinion, I'm hesitant in Procreate because I'm not so sure it's got everything that you need to give you that final file. And so I think you're probably in the hunt on the right way towards the solution. And that is to do your joyful drawing, your joyful sketch. And then when you're time to get serious about it, bring it into Clip Studio and do it the rest of the way.
Right. Well, I will say as someone who's just started dabbling with Procreate at night in bed, watching a little TV with the missus, I'll be doodling sometimes tomorrow's comic off of a template that I've brought in from Photoshop to Procreate.
Right.
I'll fiddle with a Sheldon, bring it into Photoshop the next morning in the studio, liven it up a little bit on a Cintiq in a way that I can do in 2 seconds that I can't do in Procreate. There's just tips and tricks and things that you can do in Photoshop that I personally don't know how to do in Procreate. But a lot of the skeletonized work and maybe even some of the fully realized work was done in Procreate. I bring it into Photoshop, bada bing, bada boom, I'm done in 5 seconds. I print it out and then I'm ready to start inking.
Yeah.
So I see why this person says that Procreate can be fun because the iPad has that thing that we always wanted, which is a digital notepad. It doesn't weigh anything. There are no cords attached. It's like a mini Cintiq with that pen.
Yeah.
And it's lightweight. It's pleasant to hold. The screen is clear. It's adjustable. The touch is nice. So I get why someone says, I want to draw on the iPad. That's fun. You know, I personally understand that. But I also know it just, at least in my first cursory pass, it's not as powerful. It's not as able to do as many things as either Clip Studio or Photoshop. So I personally do some of the fun work in Procreate and bring it in to the workhorse in the morning at the studio sometimes.
Procreate, does that do CMYK?
It does. It's a little buried as far as I remember in the settings, but yes, it does CMYK. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the first thing that I would be.
But as far as for me, the sketching is always the most fun because it's blue sky and Procreate can absolutely handle that, you know?
Yeah.
So why not do it there? You're lying in bed, you're watching Game of Thrones, getting mad at the ending, and you're sketching away, and that's fun, you know? So that's that.
So I think that's a good answer.
I do too. I think, as is always the case, I think my answer was delightful.
Yes, I think it was.
Okay, so let's jump into the next question.
We've got another question. Actually, I wanted to bring this up because it ties into an earlier question where somebody was asking us about our writing process.
Okay.
And I was listening back to the show and I'm like, oh, I really wanted to talk about this other aspect. And I didn't. And lo and behold, James Anderson writes us a question that asks about this very aspect. So if you go back and listen to that other writing episode that we did, just pick it up right here, because James says, how far ahead do each of you plot out your comics? How far ahead are you, Dave?
Well, this is a topic that we've talked about before, as you said. And so here's the thing. With Sheldon, if there's an arc, it's only at tops a week, maybe 2 weeks now. And those are rare for Sheldon nowadays. You know, they tend to be really, really short, one, two, three comics in a row on a topic. But even then, there's not an arc. So with Sheldon, it's very one to one to one to one to one and not a lot of thought ahead. With Drive, I have plot lines literally years ahead, probably 5 years out. Do I know what I'm going to be writing? Now, is it specific? No, but I know where I need to get to. We've talked about this before. It's like knowing that I'm leaving Los Angeles and I need to get to New York. I know what New York looks like. I can picture Times Square in my mind. I can even picture some of the surrounding roads. I don't know the specific road that I'm going to be taking through Kansas to get to New York, but I know I'm going to get there.
Right.
So, and I know some of the landmarks I'm going to hit along the way. I'm going to hit the Grand Canyon. I'm going to pop up to Chicago. I'm going to get some sausages. And then I'm going to pop back down to New York, right? So I know the broad strokes of how far ahead I have to plot out because I know the big landmarks along the way. Do I know the smaller landmarks? A week or two ahead of time, I know those, you know, but not half a year ahead. That's how I do it. How does Brad Geiger do it?
So that's what I really wanted to talk about. It's me, not you. So like I said during that last show, I've been doing a lot with like the hero's journey and using some of these writing archetypes and so forth. And I'm really enjoying it. And also using that sitcom template that broke down a half an hour show into, okay, the first 3 minutes, this has got to happen.
Right.
Minute number four through minute number six, it's the introduction of story A.
Right.
Minute number seven through nine, story B, and so on. I found that to be super helpful because when I look back at my writing when I wasn't using that outline and that guide, I meandered all over the place.
Right.
My whole approach to writing was when you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's not great reading. That's not an enjoyable. Have you ever talked to somebody who talks like that? You know, it's like, you know, they start out telling you about how they went to the baseball game. Somewhere along the way, the transmission went out on the car and then they stopped for family portrait and they never get to the baseball game.
Right.
You know, so a lot of my early writing was like that.
Yeah.
So I really like that helps. But what that allows me to do is two things. When I'm plotting, I can sit there and I can say, okay, story A and story B, what's story A going to be? And sometimes that's really difficult. And I've got to remind, in fact, I've got it written at the bottom of my sketchbook. All you need is a goal to start a story. All you need is a want to start a story.
Okay. So a story, what do you mean by that?
A story starts with somebody.
I'm even going to lean back so I can think about
okay.
this. Now.
Yeah,
now you know
I forgot,
serious.
We're on camera. What it means is, for a story to start, somebody has to want something, whether that's wanting a goal, wanting a relationship,
wanting
fans, they want something.
Power.
What do they want?
Right. Okay.
Or, you know, and you can extrapolate, what do they need? You know, but it's something, what do you want? And that's how in the last few chapters, each one of them boils down to one sentence. Mismatch wants to advance her relationship with Captain Heroic.
Right.
Desi wants to find out what's happening with Mismatch. That's the want.
Right.
Now, once you got the want, it becomes a puzzle to unfold, right? How is she going to do that? Well, so you've got story A and story B. Story A is you come up against the barrier. Then in the next couple of pages, it becomes you try and fail. And then you try some more. You pass the point of no return. And then finally, it's the ultimate failure or success of that want.
Right.
Story B, same thing. And by using that template, I go back and forth between the two stories and it doesn't meander.
Mm-hmm.
By doing that, what I can do is now I've got an outline and each one of these points is mismatch tries and fails. Mismatch finds another way. It's, again, just a sentence. Then as I'm firming it up, I can go in there and I say, okay, now this is going to be page five. In page five, Captain Heroic needs to decide that he needs a secret identity to date Mismatch. Now that's a more developed idea, right?
Right.
But that's as far as it goes. I'm gonna do the whole outline using maybe a short paragraph.
Just for bare each bones, page. Bing, bing, bing.
Yes. Just the plot points, the important things that need to happen on that page.
Gotcha.
So now I'm plotted out through, oh gosh, this will probably take me until the end of fall. I know what's going to happen, but I don't know what's going to happen. I know the broad strokes. I know that, you know, Cap and Mismatch are going to get to a certain point in their relationship. I have no idea how it's going to happen. I have no idea, you know, what those details, because now I can go through, now I'm working on today, page seven. Mm-hmm. And it is Desi summons a demon to find out what's to spy on Mismatch. I had no idea who that demon, well, I kind of knew who the demon was going to be. I didn't know how she was going to summon the demon. I didn't know the process that would take. I didn't know whether it would be enjoyable or disenjoyable.
Right.
All I knew is it had to be interesting.
Right.
I had to make some laughs happen along the way. I had to keep at somebody's attention. That's when the real writing happens. And if you're going to try this, I'm going to tell you right now, don't go see to your pants the way I sometimes do, because the further out you're able to do the actual writing, the more you have little things that come up and you're like, oh, if I have Desi,
if I seed this right now, 30 pages from now is going to be delightful. Yeah.
Or the way sometimes happens with me, oh gosh, it's too bad that I didn't have a red balloon in the background 5 pages ago, because now that balloon can come back.
Sure.
So the further ahead you write, the more you can retro go back and say, oh, I'm going to plant a seed here. I'm going to plant a seed there.
Can I tell you the poor man's version of this that I do?
Yeah.
With Drive, I intentionally seed Chekhov's guns into the story, forcing myself to come back to those guns. And for those of you who know, Chekhov's gun is the idea that once you introduce and leave a gun on stage in theater, you have to somehow use that gun. It is a torture to the audience and to the story to have brought and introduced this big element into a play and then not using it, right? That's a good summation of Chekhov's gun.
Absolutely.
So what I will do is I will introduce into the story, there is a massive engine design flaw on the drive, and somehow it's going to pay off 300 pages from now, right? Or this character at one point stabbed someone, and that's going to pay off some. I don't know how I'm going to use it, but I intentionally, I basically am writing future Dave into a corner 4 years from now.
Yes, by intentionally.
Intentionally seeding ideas into the story, knowing that I have to revisit that 200, 300 pages from now. And not yet sure how I'm going to do it or even why it needs to be done. But I have thus far, knock on wood, successfully circled back on a lot of those. And people go, you knew about that 400 pages ago? And yes. I go, yes, I did. Yes, I did. Wink. And it's just like this wink to the camera. Like, I didn't know how I was going to pay that off. But in the meantime, you've had 3 years to think about it.
Yes.
And if you're a good writer, it's sitting at the back of your brain going, I got to talk about how he stabbed that person and why they did that and what that meant to their relationship.
Yeah.
And so your subconscious and conscious are working on that in the background for 4 years. Now, here's the thing. You also can't introduce 10 to Chekhov gun because what you're going to do is you're going to get to the end of the story and people are going to go, well, what about the apple cart that you left on page five that you said the apple cart was given to him by his grandmother and it was really important to him? I don't know why I brought up apple cart, but whatever the object is or the story point is, you just have to come back to it or people will be like, well, that's unfulfilling.
Yeah.
You didn't tell us what the reason for that thing was. You know?
You can say stay tuned once.
Right.
To one plot point. But when you say stay tuned the 10th time, they're like, no, come on, you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
Chekhov's gun, I never knew that there was a phrase for that. And I'm just, I'm just flipping to the Star
don't
Trek.
Don't you dare read.
I'm flipping to
Star
Trek. Did you do Chekhov's phaser? Have you done that joke?
No, but don't you dare read another comic or I will punch you in the throat. I will punch you in the throat.
No, but Chekhov's phaser, you can use that.
I could. Thank you. Thanks so much.
I could.
Just a gentle pat on your knee. Thank you so much for that.
I think I've told you. In fact, I'm doing that right now where I'm going to say somebody, the demon can see secrets, and he's going to turn to one character and say, oh, does anybody else know? And she's going to say no, and then that's going to be it. I have no idea what the secret is.
Yeah,
but I know that this character needs a secret.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
I got to figure out what her secret is.
And I got to say, one of the fun things about having Brad in the studio this week has been the back and forth of ideas. It's been delightful. It makes me wish for a studio environment that we were nearby and could share some space, because there'll be lovely lulls of 2 hours where we're just quietly working, and then suddenly someone will go, I need a pitch on this, or is this working? And you turn around, you bang, 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 bada boom. The joke is improved. The drawing is improved. The layout is improved. It's been so lovely for both of us.
I've said on the show numerous times that I am I'm a hermit in my studio and very proud of. I'm very comfortable in my hermitage.
Sure.
I like working that way. This is the first weekend I've ever thought, oh, geez, it'd be really nice to work here in a studio environment, like specifically with you.
Yeah.
This would be so nice to do, because Dave also is honest enough to say, no, that joke ain't working. And he's somebody I respect enough that when he does say, nah, that joke ain't working, I actually listen to him. And he actually helped me through improving a comic punchline 100%.
Yeah.
It's a much better punchline.
Well, and that's been going the other way, too, because I'm currently brainstorming the title of a future project. And Brad and I have been working on titles all weekend. And even though neither one of us have necessarily nailed it yet, we both have thrown out ideas to be like, there's an element there. Let's save that element. We're going to circle back around on that brainstorming wise. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we trust in each other enough to go, that's not the right path, but save the kernel element of that, because there's something there, you know?
Yeah. But I have been standing in that studio. I get to use the standing desk. I have been standing at that studio and thinking, oh, this is really nice. Like, and every now and again, like, I'll just come around, sit into one of those nice chairs, the soft chairs, the carbon-based life form sometimes jumps up on my lap. I think they do that sometimes.
The dog, yes.
Yeah, they
do. That's called love. That's a new emotion for Brad. He's not sure how to process it.
Yeah.
That's called love and affection. You'll know. Yeah, exactly. That dog is giving you love. That's what that is. Yeah.
But then just say, oh, here's the thing that I've been, or just like brainstorming future things for Comic Lab, where it's like, oh, I'm going to take a like 5 minute mental break. Here's something I want to talk about.
Right.
You know?
Right. Let's just try to bang this out real quick, because we're really trying to, and this is kind of fun for the audience to know. We would really like to try to incorporate video into future Comic Labs, where you could watch us recording a Comic Lab for either patrons or for the public, watch it as it's being recorded. And you would get the full show, because as you can imagine, there's 2 to 3 minutes that we edit out for every show.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So you would get the full picture. You would see a little bit behind the scenes, and you would get to see our facial reactions, which for Brad is like watching a vaudevillian at work. The amount of times that tongue darts out his mouth, or the gesticulations of like an old 1950s Catskills comedian, just the hand made. It's like watching Paul Lynde at work. You know, oh, I'm so happy to be here. We're having such a fun time. Just imagine the gesticulations of Paul Lynde, and you've got Brad Geiger in a nutshell. Like, oh, I mean, I of course would have invited my wife, but she couldn't make it. That kind of a thing. He is a delight to be around physically. And it would be so fun to capture that on video. So we've been trying to figure out how to capture Comic Lab on video. And it's, as you can imagine, it's a technical and logistical nightmare. Because you have to introduce light packages. You have to introduce separate camera tracks. You have to try to sync everything up. You have to upload video. You have to maybe do some light editing. It's all a nightmare. And so we're trying to figure that out. But anyway, it's been fun to try to brainstorm that this weekend.
Oh, I know. I mean, I've got a light package, but I never...
All right. He's here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
I never realized how often I stick my tongue out. Now I'm doing it. It's like, oh.
Even that joke was a Paul Lynn joke. I mean, I never realized I had a light package. Sorry about that. Circle meets the square. Anyway, we've started doing Paul Lynn this weekend. It's been really fun.
It's hard to stop once you've started.
Once you start doing Paul Lynn, it's really hard to stop doing it.
It really is, Peter.
I'm going to tell you, Ray. I'm going to tell you, it's hard to stop doing it, and I'm going to leave it there. All right. Let's do one last question to end off this video recorded. We're trying this, by the way.
We've done.
And if you are a patron and listening to this on your RSS feed or on your iTunes or on your podcast app, make sure you go over to patreon.com/comiclab, tune in, and you can watch the video version of this, which we're trying for the first time since Brad's in town.
Yeah.
We'll see how it looks. We'll see how it sounds. And you can at least see Brad's Paul Lynn gesticulations.
Absolutely.
As I say, we're having a fun time here in Southern California. All right. So
well, you vamped just long enough for me to find our next question.
Oh, great. Perfect. I went just long enough.
Yes.
How's that for professionalism?
This is one that you're going to love. You're going to love this one. This comes in from Mark Ashworth, who writes, if comic conventions are going by the wayside as likely places to meet other comic artists face-to-face, especially the ones you would otherwise never see in person, where else would be a good event to do that? In other words, what's the replacement for comic conventions when it comes to meeting other comic artists?
Well, I'm going to posit something and then we'll talk about specifics, okay? I was once on a flight to New York Comic Con and I was sitting next to a salesman, a road salesman on a flight. And I said, and this was back a ways, I said, even now, there's Skype, there's phone calls. Why do you still fly? Why do you still meet people in person? Like, what's the advantage to that? And he turned to me and he said, there's nothing like meeting someone. No. All right. He said, I can guarantee you that the personal contacts I make will generate X amount more sales than the emails, the phone calls, the Skypes, the Facebook time, you know, the FaceTiming, all that sort of stuff. He goes, there is nothing to replace the face-to-face interaction of a human with a human. And our sales show that. Mm-hmm. And it still justifies going on the road as a salesman. And that stuck with me because I will be honest with you, the cartoonist that I meet at a Comic-Con, it's an instant bond that's much stronger than any email reach out. Even if it's just a quick 5-minute conversation, I remember that person. Oh my gosh, she was hilarious in real life. Oh my gosh, he did that kindness and offered me that thing. And you remember the face, you remember the context, you remember all the personality of it. And so there is still something powerful. And we've talked about this before about why I still go to certain comic cons. And it's because I want to maintain or meet new people at a show. Right. And so, to me, it's important. And then now let's get into the specifics of it. So for me, I gotta be honest, Comics Camp in Alaska that we talked about 2-3 shows ago, that was amazing. You're doing a deep dive into the inner layers of someone's personality onion. You know, you're going past the surface to a deeper layer of the onion and you're getting to know the real them. I also personally enjoy, in my case, I live in a metropolitan city, Los Angeles, and the NCS has a Los Angeles chapter, and there might be one in your region, the National Cartoonist Society. You can look up the chapters and see if you can drop by. And the first one is usually welcoming, and after the second or third, they might say, well, it's time for you to become a member. You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Also, if you live in New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles, I know that there are animation or artist meetups, right? In my case in Los Angeles, there's also something called the Cartoon Arts Professional Society, CAPS, that Sergio Aragonés set up years ago. And so that's another social way to do it. Another one, Brad, is the Drink and Draws. And a lot of those exist in cities, big and small. You don't necessarily have to live in Chicago or New York or LA. The Drink and Draws, you can do a Google search, say Drink and Draw Des Moines. Drink and Draw Sioux Falls. I mean, maybe, well, let's be honest. There's not going to be one in Sioux Falls. Why did I bring up Sioux Falls of all the cities? No one wants to go to Sioux Falls.
Drink and drink.
It's called the Drink and Drink in Sioux Falls because you're in Sioux Falls. Anyway, there's one person just crying in Sioux Falls like now listening to this going, I can't leave. This is where my family is. In most cities in the U.S. will have a Drink and Draw. And then there's another one like live drawing events. Those exist for all types of artists, but cartoonists go there all the time, right? Yep. So you can go to a local artist meetup, or usually you can pay 5, 10, 15, 20 bucks and be part of a live draw event where an artist will pose or, you know, that kind of thing.
Life drawing.
Life drawing. Say, what did I say?
But when you said life draw, I was thinking live streaming.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, yeah. When you're talking live drawing, absolutely.
And what I'm getting at, and I'm sorry that I keep talking, but one of the things I'm getting at is that there's nothing that can replace physical space, physical contact. I met Brad physically. I resonated with him. Brad, we don't need to go into that on the podcast. Anyway, now I cannot shake Paul
Lynn.
I'm doing it all the time now.
It's getting better and better.
I don't know if it's getting better and worse. Like, I'm doing an iteration of Paul Lynn now.
If you go much further, you're going to be right into Charles Nelson Reilly.
Charles Nelson Reilly versus Paul Lynn.
I can't do voices, though. I'm really bad.
Charles Nelson Reilly had a more nasally quality.
He was, how's that for a topper? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oh, that's right.
Whoa,
he did that's Charles Nelson Reilly. But Paul Lynn, he ended his jokes on a fade out. You know what I mean? Like, he would be like, and that's why I don't go back to Palm Beach. And it would just kind of fade off into the microphone, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. It was almost like he was
Charles Nelson Reilly ended on a big pickle. It was always like, whatever that was.
It was very bombastic.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, good. I'm glad we sorted that out. What a great answer that no one asked for.
We've got to figure out Rip Taylor and
Rip
we just got to go through all the overblown 70s comedians.
Yeah, boy. Okay. So anyway, what I'm getting at is you can't replace that physical contact.
Yes.
So if you're not going to Comic Cons, find some event in your town, whether it be a live drawing event, a drink and draw, a local NCS chapter, a local cartoonist appreciation society, a museum meetup. Something like that. Don't you think, Brad? What other options am I forgetting?
A church event, community organization. No.
Your local Rotary Club, yeah. Kiwanis, the Elks, Kiwanis. Moose Lodge.
I'm going to add one thing, and that is that if you feel the need to make these connections, if you're like, oh, I want to meet some other cartoonists, I want to make some friends, and you hear me particularly say, you know, comic conventions are out, forget about it. Always remember, if this is something that you feel you need, comic conventions are still a viable place to do that. I'm just saying you don't need to buy a booth. You can do that without going into the hole financially, without putting a whole lot of time into this, that you can't use on comics. You can still buy a ticket and go to a comic convention and achieve the exact same thing.
Okay, here's where I'm going to course correct you, because I disagree with you on one small point. So let's say I have paid $2,000 to buy a booth at a show.
Not true.
Brad Geiger has paid $50 to buy a ticket. He then comes to my booth as a fellow cartoonist, not to buy anything, but to network with me. My attitude in that moment is, I don't want to network with you. I have to pay off this booth and then make 2-3 times cost so that it was worthwhile to come here. So it's lovely to meet you, Brad Geiger. Bye. Move along. Give him the Brad Geiger shove off, because listen, maybe we'll have a drink later tonight. I don't want to talk to you right now at the booth. You know what I mean?
So let's talk about good networking.
Okay.
In other words,
how do you do it?
If you're going to do that, you don't stand up and monologue and filibuster in front of this poor guy's booth.
Right.
Or in front of that poor woman's booth the whole time.
Right.
You don't monologue. But what you do is you come up and say, hey, I'm not exhibiting at this convention, so I've got a little bit more mobility. Can I go grab you a cup of coffee? Can I go get lunch for you since you're trapped behind the table?
That's nice.
Can I do this for you? Can I do that for you? Here's my cell phone number. If you need anything, just give me a holler. And if I can, I'll come and do whatever favor you need, et cetera, et cetera. Once you see that maybe there's something there, in other words, that's step one. Step two is, once you've started that and you've kind of maybe built the beginnings of a relationship, say, oh, I know this great place for dinner. If you don't have any other plans, maybe we'll go grab a bite.
Right. Okay. I will agree with that. Okay. So that is a viable solution.
Yeah.
Basically the attitude of giving something before you ask for anything.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
But don't stand in front of the poor sap's table and filibuster.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that answers that one pretty well. So
absolutely.
Find meet space, find a comics convention, be a giver before you are a taker. I think that's fair advice.
Yeah.
And then also on that note, I will say you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. My name is Brad Geiger. I'm the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm Dave Kellett, his friend and cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped. And this week's Hour of Comics Advice has been brought to you by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. And a specific shout out to Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media. Didn't have
Woodstock,
the piece of paper in front of me.
Woodstockmedia.com.
That's right. Matt, hopefully we got that right for you. And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at www.worldrecord.net. And we will see you next week.
Bye-bye, everybody.